Good evening and welcome to Conversations with Crystal. I am your hostess, Crystal. Thank you for joining me for another week. I hope you're enjoying the guests as much as I am. This evening, I have the most amazing vocalist. She is a soul singer, a gospel singer, and a blues singer all rolled into one. She has the most amazing voice, and her name is Lisa Olbeck. G'day, Lisa. How are you going this evening?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm going really well. I'm really pleased to be able to speaking with you this evening. You're a really great woman in the industry, and I really love that you're so out there. You do a lot to help the community of singers or vocalists, and, you know, I love what you put out and the energy that you put out as well.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, what I didn't mention in your intro there is that you have a band called Mercy Train.
That's right.
And how long have you had that?
Oh, well, I've always had a band, but when we did the last album, which was called Mercy Train, I just liked the name so much, I thought, I'll call you the Mercy Train Boys. So that's what they're called now. So they have a name.
And they didn't have one before?
No, it was just Liza Olbeck and band, you know, and I never liked that. It's always, you know.
Yeah, got to give them a name.
Yeah.
They need to know where they fit. Now, Lisa, I know that you grew up in a gospel genre, so to speak. Was your mum a vocalist or your dad? How did that all start and come about?
Well, mum and dad were both, mum was a piano player and dad played organ, and he worked for the ABC, he was a sound engineer. And mum had a singing group which wore the smocks and everything, and they did sort of gospel choral music. And I used
Beautiful.
To, yeah, and I used to say, can I sit in? I used to sit in and do the harmonies, and I just loved it. So it's, I think it sort of set the tone. And I used to watch a lot of those old movies with, you know, nightclub singers singing Billie Holiday and all that sort of stuff. So I just love that sort of style of Black American music.
Oh, absolutely. It's my favourite as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Now, what age would that have been where you got really interested in wanting to become a vocalist?
Seven.
Yeah. Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah, but I played cello and piano and recorder, actually, so I was in the classical world till I was about 16.
Oh, really? That's very interesting. Yeah. Did you ever sing classically, though?
Yeah, I did some classical stuff with mum, but I wanted to be a soprano. I always wanted to be the lead in the singing group, but I never got to.
And why is that? Because your voice is not soprano, or?
Oh, these ladies were real. Real soprano. One of them was always on the ABC on the radio, so she was quite well known.
Yeah. It can become a little frustrating, can't it, when you're young and all you want to do is be centre stage, out the front, commanding the audience.
Yeah. I didn't really know at that time. I did a lot of theatre stuff with mum, like, you know, musical sort of stuff and playing cello and things like that and orchestras and...
Yeah. Why the cello, if you don't mind me asking?
I think I had a crush on the cello teacher, to tell you the truth. And I just thought it was different. So
Yeah. That's interesting. And so while we're on the musical instruments, do you play any instruments now? Do you still play cello or?
No. I still play recorder. I play it quite seriously, though. I don't play the little descant. I play quite I play about four or five recorders. I really love it. And I play piano and guitar, but not that well, just to write. I write.
Oh, okay. And what do you prefer with guitar, like an acoustic guitar, I'd imagine, or no?
Oh, yeah. No, electric guitars, no.
Well, that's great. And do you find it, myself, I find it very fulfilling to be in the music world and to be able to do gigs and, you know, perform in front of people. I imagine because you've done it for a while as well, that you absolutely love it as well.
I do. I love it at the moment when you're on there, when you're creating. I just don't like all the other stuff that you have to go through.
All the waiting. Admin.
I don't even mind doing that. It's the waiting and, you know, just stuff that gets harder as you get older, I think, but you just sort of try and enjoy the music.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So are you a writer as well?
Yeah.
Songwriter?
Yeah.
Wonderful. For those who don't know, and how long have you been doing that for?
Oh, since my first band when I was about 15, I think.
That's really awesome. Do you remember? Well, of course you would remember. What kind of a song was it?
I still remember it, and it was a ballad that my brother and I, because my brother was in a band with me.
Nice.
It's a song I wrote. It was a bluesy sort of ballad. Yeah, I thought it was all right. I don't.
Yeah. You can't go wrong with a 12 bar.
No, it wasn't even a 12 bar. It was sort of, yeah, it was in the, I guess it was a rock blues sort of
thing. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, yeah. So how many songs do you think you've written?
Oh, God. Finished?
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you. I've got 4 albums worth, so.
Awesome, awesome.
That, yeah.
Yeah. And do you find with each album, can you see yourself progressing as a songwriter?
Yeah, I do, but then I look back and think, yeah, I really liked that. You know, I think that some days I think that album, I like the stuff I did on that rather than what I've done now. And then some days I think, no, I like what I'm doing now. Because you're trying to sort of hone in on what you do best.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I think, beg your pardon, sorry.
That's all right.
So where do you feel as though, because I know you as a gospel singer, as the blues singer and the soul singer, solely blues, and so where do you feel you sit best? I don't like to put people in a box, so I guess, but what's your favourite spot?
Well, sort of I really am a mix because I came up through blues rock and then I went to jazz funk and then I discovered soul and then I just sort of melded them all together. I really like, I love blues jazz. I mean, I suppose that's probably my favourite. I love anything jazz blues.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, my favourite artist was Billie Holiday, you know.
Yeah.
From way back then. So who did you get? You got your inspiration from your parents and, of course, that sexy cello teacher.
Yeah.
But was there a band or any specific other artist that grabbed your attention and you went, oh, gee, I want to be that kind of a singer?
Renee Geyer, of course. I just...
Oh, wow, yeah.
There was no one, when I was 15, there was no female artist. I didn't really know any, only Sandy Shaw and people like that. And Poplin was sort of, she'd been gone. So I didn't really know her stuff. And we didn't have music shows on TV in Australia. So GTK was on one night and I was sitting in my room and my brother came and got me and said, come and have a look at this woman. She said, this is what you need to listen to.
Oh, wow.
And I came out and it was Gaia doing Man's World and I just went, oh, I didn't know people sang like that.
Yeah, it's when you find an artist that just gets you, you know, yeah. Or you get, you know, it just kind of opens up your world for you, doesn't it?
It did, and I learnt to sing blues runs and things from her. I used to listen to her every day and I'd just try or do all the runs and I used to get really frustrated. And I love Stevie Wonder. I'm a big fan of Stevie Wonder and Gladys Knight. I love all those guys, but I also love Taj Mahal and Ann Peebles. And,
oh, yes. Yep.
Yeah. She was my
favorite. I love Taj Mahal myself. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's just got something. Yeah. I like a bit of sense of humour in music, and he's got a lot of that.
Yeah, I do too. Now, as a lady or female, how have you found the music world? Have you found it very encouraging from young, I mean, not now, but when you were young breaking into the scene? so to speak, when you become more other than what your parents were doing and that kind of world, when it became more mainstream? How did you find it breaking into the industry that way?
I've never been a big feminist, but I did grow up with a mother that, because my dad left when I was young, so my mum was a fiercely independent woman and did lots of music. She played herself and she was always off at night playing somewhere. And so I sort of just accepted that that's, you have to work hard. And I remember in my first band when I was 21 in Sydney, I came to Sydney I had some really good people around me, and he said, you've got to buy your own PA and your own microphone, you've got to cart your own PA. And so I did all this stuff. So I was, you know. But the thing is, when I first started singing, there were, as I said, there wasn't many female singers out of the pop scene.
No.
So I used to get frustrated because we were doing a lot of Bad Company stuff and Free and Led Zeppelin, and I wasn't allowed to sing any of that. I did harmonies and I did the odd Joplin song. And it wasn't until Stevie Nicks came, and then people went, oh, look, an attractive girl can actually sing rock. So you're allowed to be attractive, you're allowed to wear a dress, and you're allowed to sing rock.
Wow.
So that changed my world a lot, I think.
Yeah. So it was quite frustrating at first for you.
It was a bit.
Now, you know, something that because my great aunt was on stage from 14, so she was in the show lines. And one thing she always said to me was, don't be a backup singer, because you'll be forever cast as a backup singer and you won't get the front spot. Mm. How true do you believe that to be? Maybe not now, but we're talking about she was on stage from like the 30s to the 80s, you know.
Gosh, yeah, when I first started, I had a manager and he said, I got offered to sing backing vocals with Doug Parkinson, which was huge.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, yes, and he said, no, you don't do that because then you'll just become a backing singer. But I mean, I love being a backing singer. If someone said, can you be my backing singer and just do all my BVs and travel around, I'd say, yes, I'm in there, because I love harmonies. That's my passion.
Yes, and speaking of that, I know that you run a workshop called Sing With Soul.
Yes, I do.
And you hold that out at, remind me of the place, Butcher's Brew. Yeah, usually on a Tuesday once a month.
Yeah.
So now I've been to your workshop and I found it highly enlightening, because I can't sing harmony. And I think that that's probably my great aunt's influence there. Don't learn harmonies, you know. You want the front spot. So I wanted to learn that because, you know, sometimes in the band, you know, the husband will sing a song and you've got to do a backup or a harmony with him, and I have a lot of trouble with that. So how have you found when people come to your workshop, how have you found that they slot into being able to do harmonies and backups?
Well, they're pretty quick. As you know, we got three-part harmony going straight away pretty much, and just, I mean, obviously it's not, you really need to be one-on-one, but, you know, just singing in that sort of where you're in a group, it's so much easier. And we had some beautiful, we get some beautiful three-part harmonies going, and the last one we did was just amazing, actually. It was, you know, it's just, it gives me a buzz, because when we first do it and even just singing, you know, and then they all sing it together, and I said, there's a harmony, you're doing it right now, that's it, you know, and just.
Yeah, and maybe they don't even realise.
No, because there's different ways of doing harmonies, and this is what I say to people, not everyone can just hear it. Sometimes you have to do it technically, like going from the one to the three, and sometimes people learn it like another melody rather than as a harmony. There's all different ways. Yeah, there's different ways.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm getting a little bit better, because we do some, you know, Bye Bye Love, the Everly Brothers and that kind of thing, and they have sweet harmonies.
Yeah.
And I think my husband says, oh, no, just do it this way. And I'm like, no, 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 just let me go and then you harmonise with me.
Yeah.
That seems to be the easier way for me. But, yeah, so it's very fulfilling for you to do that. And how long have you had these workshops going for?
Oh, I did them about 15 years ago at Mosman and Evelyn College, and I thought, this is for me, because I was teaching and I really don't enjoy teaching because I'm more of a motivator than a teacher.
Yeah.
And I found the whole half an hour with school kids just painful. It wasn't, there's no, I'm just not that tolerant. But when I did the adults, I thought, oh, this is great. And we used to go and out to dinner at restaurants and sing. I used to make them sing in restaurants. And
oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, it was fun. I thought, oh, I'll do this again one day. And I was talking to, I've done it at a festival too. I did it at Kiama Festival and it was fantastic. And I was telling Carolyn about it at Butcher's Brew, and she's always into stuff. And she said, oh, look, why don't we do it here? And I said, oh, it's not very big. And she said, no, but we'll make it work. And it's really working well. So,
yeah, yeah, I think it does too. When you said you were teaching, was that teaching singing or like mainstream teaching?
Just teaching singing, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
trying. I usually end up counselling people.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I'm just not, yeah.
It's just very, very interesting. So you like doing groups of people more than a one-on-one, but you would do a one-on-one, correct?
No, I just don't enjoy it. And group singing, people come along, adults come along, especially adults, they come along to sing and enjoy it, and it's just a different thing. They really want to sing and they really want to sing with other people, but you get people who just come for a lesson every week for half an hour and they're not really into it. And
yeah,
you know, I don't know, I just don't.
I've kind of found too with people that do singing lessons, and of course everyone has at one point, unless you have a goal in mind, what are you working for? So is it to be a solo artist or is it to be, you know, in a duo or a band, or, you know, what is their end focus other than just wanting to sing better?
Yeah. I think I always tried to get people to, especially young ones, I'd say, get together with a friend of yours who plays guitar or piano and just sing together and, you know, just didn't, learn some songs and play them together, because it's just boring otherwise, I think.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. And I find too, being able to play an instrument and sing, that helps you actually sing in tune.
Oh, yeah.
As long as your guitar's in tune.
There is that.
Yeah, that helps.
I always wished I'd gotten really good at piano and guitar so I could go out and play solo, but I probably wouldn't enjoy it. I don't know.
You like having other people around you.
Oh, yeah, bouncing off each other. And I've got a good, really amazing group of musicians that I work with, and they're all just, because we use Clayton Dolly and my husband on drums at the workshop.
Absolutely, and they're just amazing.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a real buzz.
Yeah. So from one married woman to another, how do you like working with your husband?
I don't know any different. We met and he joined my band 2 weeks later.
Wow.
I said to him, if this relationship's going to last, because I'd had a lot of relationships that didn't last because of the band.
Yep.
And I said, you know, we've got to be in the same band together. So we've been in the same band. He does other bands and so do I, but, yeah, we do.
Yeah,
Sorry, he mixes all my albums and plays drums and, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. And, you know, if you can work together and get through that part of it, you know, with everybody's personalities and that, then marriage is a breeze, really.
Yeah. We've been together 40 years, so it's...
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So he knows, you know, I mean, he's... And I think because he's a drummer too, so... I'm up the front, he's up the back. If I was with a guitarist, it might be different.
Yeah. Oh, they still know their place, Lisa.
No, he's incredible. He does my artwork. He does, you know, he does everything. So, producers.
That's fantastic. That's really great that you've got that kind of working relationship too. It's probably pretty rare, actually, to have it so good. So that's fantastic. 40 years, that's really a great milestone.
Yeah, we've been together since we were young and, just worked.
Yes. So now with your first band, were they all – so you mentioned you had a band at 15. Did you put that band together? Or did you join a band?
I wasn't 15. I tried out for a band when I was 15.
Yeah.
I just used to jam with my brother, but I was too shy, and I auditioned for a band at 16. It was at 17, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I went to – my brother had a band, and my girlfriends and I used to go up to the local hall and listen to them, and I just was so desperate to sing with them, and they wouldn't let me.
Oh, and then brother.
I know. And then they started playing Move Over one night by Janis Joplin, and the guy couldn't sing it. And I said, look, I'd had a few drinks. And I said, I can sing it. And my brother said, well, go on then, get up and do it. He's quiet.
And you did.
And I did. And then they asked me to join the band, and I was just, that was it.
In your element.
Yeah. But I started trying to sing in bands when I was 15, but I was just too nervous, too shy, and terribly shy.
Wouldn't it be interesting if we had the confidence and we knew the things that we know now back then?
I think that would be dangerous.
Yes. You would have took the world by storm at 15, I would imagine.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I can't imagine it. It was a different era too, like, having the internet now, it's so much better.
Oh, isn't it what? So easy for us.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, my husband quite often talks about when he was, because he's a guitarist, and he was saying, you know, when we learnt songs, we had to like rewind the tape and rewind the tape and rewind the tape to get it, you know. Now we've got programs that you can put up and slow it right down to here.
Yeah. Oh, so, do everything. I mean, this latest album we've done is number one in the US Roots Music Report charts.
Fantastic.
And I mean, I couldn't have done that before the internet, because if you weren't with a record company, that was it. You know, basically.
Yes, that's a very good point to make, that it's now, the times that we live in now, we are so lucky because we have all of the electrical equipment and all the recording equipment, and you don't have to rely on getting discovered. You can make yourself discoverable.
Oh, yeah. Because we used to trudge around with our cassettes to all the record companies, and sometimes we'd even drop a box of chocolates with it.
Sweeten them up a little bit, sweeten the deal.
Drop them round at all the record companies and then just hope for the best. I never really tried. Oh, no, I did once. I tried the publishing company. And we actually got a guy from, I can't remember who it was, I think it was CBS or someone. They were interested in us, and it was going really well, and they were really keen, and kept listening to our stuff and said, oh, yeah, we're really keen to sign you. And then Noiseworks appeared, and they started looking after them and said, look, we don't really have the funds or time to, we just went, no.
Take on another artist. Oh, that's a bit of a bugger.
Almost.
Yes, almost. But, you know, like we said, that you have all of this, we all do, have all of this stuff available to us now. We can go into a recording studio if we want, or a rehearsal studio, or we can do it all at home.
Yeah.
It's just so geared towards being able to record your own music now, and I think that that's just a fantastic advancement in this industry.
Yeah, it's just being able to promote yourself without leaving your house. You know, I mean,
that's true too. That's true too.
Blessing.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to have to do poster runs in the middle of the night, you know, hiding from the police, putting posters up.
putting them on the telegraph poles.
Yeah, from the back of a panel van or something. Stop the car.
Now, do you have any of those old posters? Did you keep any?
Yeah, I kept a few. One for a band I was in called The Raven. pretty bad. Yeah.
And what kind of band was that? What did you sing, or was it your own music, or?
Yeah, it was half covers, half original. We're called The Raven, which was a heavy, it sounds like a heavy metal band, but it was like a Toto foreigner type band, and we did all the supports around for all the big bands like Mice X and all that.
So, interesting is that?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we it was a real buzz. But yeah, it was funny. Just people used to call us Raven. I said, no, it's not Raven, it's The Raven.
Yeah.
Like Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. So when did you perform your first, having written songs, when did you perform your first one live, and how did you feel about doing that?
It was that song. I performed it, well, I would have been 17 at my first. We did Springwood. I used to live up the Blue Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing a gig at Springwood Civic Centre, and the Sydney bands used to come up. I think it was someone, Spectrum or someone. I'd never heard of them. They came up and we did the support for them. And we did a few of our originals, but that was the only one I sang. And it went over really well, and I was so chuffed. I just was so excited about it.
Oh, yeah, it would have been. And when did you – have you recorded that song?
No, I haven't.
Oh, now, you know what? You need to put that on your drawing board.
I've revisited it, but I can't remember. I can only remember a verse and a chorus of it, and it's, yeah, all I remember. My brother probably remember more of it.
Yeah. Now, let's quickly talk about your brother. Is he in a band? What does he play?
Not anymore. No, he gave up. He was a guitarist, keyboard player, singer.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he was. It's a shame he gave up because he had a voice like Michael McDonald.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, his harmonies were, you know, it was so good. He had a very high voice.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we wrote a lot together.
Now, we've been speaking a lot about your music that you've written, so I think we should take this moment to listen to one of your singles, and I think I'd like to introduce It's Hard Sometimes, because that's definitely true of the music industry, isn't it? So would you like to tell the listeners a little bit about how that song come about?
Well, it was my COVID song. It was during COVID, and it started out as a bit of a sad song, and then I always do this. I always end up with a bit of, it became sort of a New Orleans-y, groovy, fun song, with trombone and sousaphone and everything, and it's quite a jaunty little number.
Nice. I like that. So I think what we'll do is just pause here and we will listen to that track.
Hard sometimes.
I'm going a little crazy.
It gets hard.
So
It's hard sometimes. It gets hard.
Hard.
So hard.
Hard.
Gets hard
sometimes.
I'm doing the best I can.
Well, Lisa, I do think that that is a fantastic track. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you have fun when you're writing and when you finally get to perform the songs that you've written?
Ooh.
Or do you find it a little nerve-wracking?
Oh, it's a lot of work. It's because we get really – this time was a lot of work. This album, just because of COVID, and we were doing a lot of things on the computer and people were sending us stuff, so it was hard to put things together.
Mm-hmm.
But I always enjoy doing the harmonies. That's my favorite thing. And our daughter actually did some harmonies on this album, so that was even more exciting.
Oh, fantastic. Now, does she have a singing career?
She's a singing drummer.
A singing drummer, Karen Carpenter, number two.
She's into indie sort of indie music
stuff.
She's
yeah.
not in a band at the moment, but she was in a band called Stressless.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
But she's actually, her previous boyfriend, they were together from the age of 15. They travelled around the world because he had a band called Beef Jerk, and they sort of an underground, and they travelled all around the world in Germany and the States. And so she's done a lot more than me in a short career.
Wow, good on her. Good on her. How old is she now?
She's 33 now.
33. Yeah. So I guess that she picked up drumming from her dad.
Drumming from her dad, singing from her mum.
Yeah. Good on her. Well, she's got the double, she's double trouble now.
Double trouble. Brilliant artist too. Really good artist.
Oh, nice. So draws and paints and that kind of thing.
Yeah, she's a very creative little thing. She's a lot quieter than me, so she's not a... She's got a more genteel voice, beautiful voice.
Right, quite sweet maybe.
Yeah, very sweet. She gets quite embarrassed when she sings with me. She said, oh, I can't, you know, can't sing like that. I said, well, you don't have to. It's, you know, it's the beauty of your voice. It's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's gorgeous. Yeah. I love that you've got a daughter or a child that, you know, is kind of taken after you too. I think that's quite rare.
Yeah, you know, she's got her own thing, that's for sure.
Yeah. So now you mentioned that your daughter has travelled overseas and done stuff overseas. What about you?
No, I'm not. I don't like flying.
Okay.
I'm not a flyer, so I don't. I've travelled all around Australia.
Yep.
I used to fly, but I don't fly anymore. I just don't like it.
Don't like it, and that's that. Yeah.
No.
Well, Australia is lucky that we have you all to ourselves.
Yeah, I'm quite happy. I'd like to go to the Greek islands, but that's about it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And Australia has some absolutely amazing places to visit.
Yeah. Oh, for you know. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you played Little Country Towns?
Yep, I have.
Aren't they the best?
They are, although it's because with the Janis show, we did a lot of touring. The Janis Joplin show, we did a lot of touring, and it can be a bit hairy sometimes.
Yes. Locals in the small towns, but any case.
Well, the people are all right. It's the you know, you're working at a community hall or something and that's the PA is just not.
Oh, well, you know what? I learnt that lesson. Always take your own PA.
Yeah. Oh, Janice was too big. We couldn't.
Too big. Yeah, you needed to have a truck like Slim Dusty did.
Only Slim could afford it. I mean, those days, I had a, when I was 21 or 22, we had our own road crew and, you know, you didn't do gigs without a lighting guy and a sound guy. I can't believe we did it. I don't know how we did it.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Was the money good, though? It would have had to have been at least decent.
It's not that much different from today, really.
You know what? It's so interesting that I've spoken to a lot of musicians that have been around the traps for a while and they go, oh, we're getting the same money as we did like 40 years ago. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, for original music. Yeah. Some, I mean, if you want to work in corporate or do functions and stuff, you can make really decent money, which is what everyone either teaches or does corporate, and then you do your originals on the side.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, I mean, I think I worked six nights a week and I got $120.
Oh.
We were supporting MySex and Sports and InXS and all those people.
Yeah.
And then I had a day job as well. So I worked 5 days a week and six nights a week.
Oh, my goodness, you must have been absolutely so tired.
Yeah. But, I mean, in the scheme of things, like a $30 a gig for each player was like 150 now, you know, or 200 now.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So it's pretty much the same for a band and even less in some cases.
Do you mind if I ask you what was your day job back then?
Ah, in accounts. I love accounts. I love doing people's accounts.
Nice.
I worked in the bank and I worked, did accounts and, yeah, loved it.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, but my passion is animals, so I've done a lot of house pet sitting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's where I'll end up.
Mad cat woman.
Mad cat. I love dogs too. I love all animals, actually, but cats are my favourite, but, you know, yeah, love it.
So what animals do you have at home now?
I have Miss Molly, who's a black and white cat who's an absolute nightmare, but I love her.
Yeah.
Yes. She's
and has her own ways, I guess, and that's stubborn, I'd say.
Yeah, she's old and feisty.
Yeah. There's no other way to be, is there?
No, well, a bit like me, I suppose.
Well, they do say animals take after their owners, so. Then again, what does that say about my dog, Freya? She's a nightmare. So.
Another one. We're all nightmares.
Yeah. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
She looks good, though. She's a beautiful-looking cat. People always say, oh, she's so pretty.
Yeah. Just don't get on her wrong side.
No. Well, sometimes she'll just be sitting there and you'll pat her and she'll just attack and you go, what was that for?
Oh, you maybe patted once too many times.
Exactly. Or you touched the wrong part, you know.
Yeah. That's funny. Animals are just hilarious, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Just hilarious. So now you mentioned a moment ago about the Janis Joplin show. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that and how that came into being?
Well, I got approached, it was about 2013, I got approached by a lady called Christine Keeble and a guy, guitarist who I'd been working with, Jeremy Edwards, and they were doing this show with, they were actually doing it with Jeff Duff.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to be the Janis, which was quite strange. And it's a theatre show called a rockumentary where you have all, it's all scripted.
Mm-hmm.
And they have audio, visual behind you. So when I talked about her, that it would come up with all the images. And so it was full on, it was absolutely full on. And we did a lot of theatres for 3 years. We toured around. It was the best thing I've ever done, I think.
Yeah, wow. Now, how did you, when you were getting up to sing, Janice, and when you still do it now, do you find that you've got to get into her headspace, or do you just, like, how much prep work do you do and the mechanics behind doing somebody as iconic as Janice?
Oh, I did a lot of crying.
Oh, did you?
When I first started doing it, because I was actually going over to Perth to see my dad because he was very ill, and I went on the train and I was trying to learn the stuff, and it was just because her phrasing and all the extra bits she puts in, it's never a simple song. It's always everything, all this, it's just weird stuff. And I just, when we had our first rehearsal, I just cried. I said, I don't think I can do this. It's just and the script, because I had to learn everything off by heart, so it was a lot of lyrics, and I just thought, oh, God, maybe I've taken on too much. But they were all really supportive, and we did a lot of rehearsals.
And
the show was, it was like I was Janice. Excuse me, Sid.
Yep.
Hold on, sorry. Greg, I can hear everything. He's emptying the fish tank while I'm trying to do anything.
It's okay.
It became like, it was really weird because a lot of that stuff I didn't know, a lot of her songs.
And, right.
But mm-hmm. It was like you were doing originals. We felt like it was an original band. They'd start the first song and I'd walk out, everyone would cheer, you know, a theatre full of 550 people, and you'd think, it's the only time in the life it's happened to me like that. It's like, I'm not Janice, but I'm going to enjoy it. And it was just, and I mean, I'm that sort of singer anyway. I'm very emotional and very, I get really into it. And so it's perfect for me. I just love it.
Yeah, she was certainly very, very iconic, that's for sure. Yeah. So you started that a fair while ago. You had a break from that. Now tell me about the show in its current form, because I do believe that you've done another show, and will you continue to do those shows, Janice Joplin shows?
Well, I stopped in 2016, I think, and then I keep getting hassled to do it, and I said no. And the lady who was doing it's not doing it anymore. And I mean, it was great having someone who was tour managing and looking after us, and she created the whole show. And I didn't want to do that again, So I just said no. Plus, it took a toll on my voice. It's a lot of work.
Oh yes.
And then I was talking to the owner of Beaches Hotel down in Thirroul. I do a lot of shows down there with the Beatles show and the Stone show, and he said, oh, come and do the Janice show. And I said, no, I don't do it anymore. And he said, well, can't you just come and just sing the songs? You don't have to do the script and everything. And I said, well, let me think about it. So when I was in the Janice show, we did a thing on her. She did this tour called the Festival Train.
Yeah. And
there was a whole lot of them. There was her, the band, Melanie Safka, who I love, Grateful Dead, Traffic, and they all got on this train and went around Canada, and there were riots and everything. It was an amazing time, and they jammed and did all these gigs when they stopped at the town's Buddy Guy. And I thought, well, why don't I do something where I'll do some of the Janice stuff, and then I'll do some Melanie, and the boys can do the Buddy Guy and the band. And so it's called Janice Joplin and the Festival Express.
I love that. How fantastic is that?
I think it's going to be good. I don't know how much I'd do it. We'll see after. We're doing it Sunday. We're doing it at Beaches anyway. So
people need to look out for that. Now, while we're on that track, you would have sent me some links to your Facebook pages, your social accounts, and also a website. And I'm going to put those into the description of the show so that people can click on those and they can stay up to date with all your appearances, everything that you're doing with the Mercy Train and Janice Show and your Sing With Soul workshops. And I think, you know, that's the best way to handle that. And I wish you all the best with that. What is your favourite Janice song?
Oh, it changes week by week. I think think I love Move Over because it's the first one of hers I ever sang.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I like Get It While You Can.
Yeah.
Which I think has got a good it's very relevant to today and everything. So it's just, you know, I think, yeah, like the sentiment.
Now I'm going to put you on the spot. What is your favourite all-time song from any band, any era, any artist, any genre?
Gosh, probably be, I don't know why, but Gladys Knight, Either One of Us Wants to Be the First to Say Goodbye.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Nice, nice.
Kills me every time. I used to do it in the First Ladies of Soul, which I was in. We used to do that song, and I found it very hard to keep it together when I sang.
Right.
I thought it was great.
Yeah. So you said before you were an emotional singer. So if you're singing a particularly sad song or a song that evokes memories, sad memories, do you find it hard to keep your own personal self out of the song?
Not really. I use it, I think. It all becomes one.
Mm-hmm.
It all becomes one. There's songs that connect, like Cry Me a River, which my dad loved. One of his favourite songs, Julie London's version. Whenever I sing that, I think of Dad.
Beautiful.
If you like the lyrical thing, and there's some mood about some songs that just have this mood and you just go into a different place, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's important as a vocalist to be able to do that too, you know.
Yeah, and judging the audience, you know, like trying to tap into them and get them to feel what you're feeling doesn't always work, but.
Yeah. Well, I cannot imagine that you have ever had a dud gig.
Many.
No.
I was actually, where were we the other day? Berkeley. And I said to Greg, I just remembered that we got booed off stage here at Berkeley Sports Club when I was young.
No, what?
Yeah, because we were a funk band. We were doing funk and blues and we were playing at this place and it was during when everyone was doing new wave, you know, like new wave
right.
sort of stuff. And they just booed us off. We were doing Michael Jackson and
Oh, how rude.
Yeah, it was funny. And my brother told the audience off because he was very blunt and he just said, you know, blame the agent, not us. We're just doing what we were told to do. And then the people who ran the venue asked us to go home. Just go home, you'll get paid.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty scary.
Oh, yeah. So now we're talking about stories. So have you got another, maybe a funny story or another really interesting story from a gig that you've done? You're giggling, so you must have a good one.
One I'll never forget. I'll try to make it short. I had the three girls singing group, which I had for years, and the three of us did this gig at, it used to be a venue, I can't remember the name of it, was opposite the entertainment centre.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, I think it was JB's or something. And we were doing a function there. They hired us three girls and piano. So we were doing our stuff, and it started badly because it was turn of the century and they asked us to wear turn of the century clothes. They gave us money and said, go to this place and you can hire outfits. And when we got there, there was hardly any left because everybody had gone to hire.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us had ill-fitting things, and one of the girls was very tall and her dress came to her, you know, calf, and she had orange sand shoes on. She forgot to bring her shoe. It's just an absolute nightmare from start to finish. And they had in the actual place, they had a petting zoo.
Oh.
So they had little pigs and they had people dressed up as turn of the century, you know, pigs and sheep.
Yeah.
We're trying to sing. We're being told to turn down because the pigs were so loud. We're trying to play over the pigs and the sheep. And then there was all this ruckus outside the window, and there was this big protest, all these people going down outside because the Russian circus was on at the entertainment centre.
Okay, and
I just went, oh, my God, we've got a bloody room full of these poor animals that are not happy.
Yeah.
And there's all these, and I thought, if they look over here and see us in here with this, they might come in here and kill us.
Oh, jeez.
It was just awful. And then they all of a sudden at about 8 o'clock, they all disappeared. They all just walked out. Some guy came and rang a bell and said, hear ye, dinner's ready. And they all took off and left us in this empty room with these animals. And I said, oh, can we stop now? And they said, no, you're booked to 8:30. You have to keep playing.
Oh, my God, seriously.
But it got worse. So we came and we thought, our manager was with us, and we said, you're going to pay for this big time. Mm. And the animals got out. We're singing and there's these little piglets running around screaming and ducks, and it was just I've never forgotten it.
I think that's fabulous.
It was a good night. Not.
Look, at the time it probably wasn't, but look back at it now. How hilarious is that?
Yeah, it was good fun. So I've had many strange gigs.
Yeah. Can you give us another one then?
The time I was in this little, I don't know if there was used to be a venue called Shadows at Crow's Nest. It was a nightclub, very seedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite small and narrow, and we were up the end near the toilets, the stage, and they had there was a drug bust. And the police came in with guns and everything, and everybody just tried to go out the exits, and we're on stage and we got stuck on stage. It was just the most terrifying thing I've ever seen or been in my life. I thought I was going to die on stage.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but they got us out, and they got us out through the back exit. But, oh, my God.
As they say, that's rock and roll.
It was. Look, the way we stopped playing there is we turned up one Saturday. We were walking in the laneway behind it to go to the Woolworths or something, and we saw them dragging all the furniture out. And I said, oh, what's going on? They said, oh, we're closed.
Oh, said, just oh. Like that.
Yeah, and then he disappeared, the owner of it.
Oh, well, that's quite suspicious, isn't it?
It's pretty bad. But, you know, amazing people played there. Crossfire and Ian Moss got up and played with us once. I mean, people just, you know, Gaia, people just walk in there at 2:30 in the morning and get up and jam. It was an incredible place.
Oh, how fantastic is that?
Yeah,
fantastic.
That were the days too, because you had Round Midnight at the Cross, and you'd play there from 2:30 till 5:30, and they had three bands that have an early band, a mid band, and then the 2:30 till 5:30. Then you'd go to the, remember that other place there everyone used to go to, 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was just amazing.
Yeah. Look, I read something really interesting today that they're talking about removing those lockout laws and noise complaint. You know how people complain, they buy a house next to the venue and then complain about the noise.
Yeah.
So I read that today and I thought, oh, that's going to be really good for our industry, because we'll be able to do the later night ones, you know, because people are just going to absolutely flock to it.
Look, it's ridiculous. Mossman Bowling Club, or it's Warringah Bowling Club, have just had this. They're on the news not so long ago because they've had so many noise problems, and that bowling club's been there, you know, 120 years or something.
Yeah.
And this one guy keeps complaining. And apparently they complain about the balls clinking on the lawn.
Oh, my God.
It's just ridiculous.
Isn't that somebody with no time, like too much time on their hands?
Yeah, no, they don't, the bands don't even play there at night. They play there from, I don't know, 3 till 6, I think, on a Sunday. You know, it's just, come on.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that. The venue has already been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Native Rose was one as well where...
Yeah, I played the last gig there, I think.
Oh, yeah, cool. A gorgeous place. I loved it. Loved that place. And, of course, they had the blues jam there. So we frequented there, you know, every week. One of the neighbours complained, it's like, hang on, it's a pub.
Yeah.
Why buy a house next to a pub? I don't understand that thought process and expect it to be quiet.
Well, it's not even
any case
loud. And I mean, that place finished quite early. I think we finished at 10 or 11 or something. And
yeah.
It's not like it's in the middle of a suburb or anything. There's a big main road there. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Look, when I was 16, I lived down it between the Merton and the Native Rose in one of the side streets down there. And that was going, God, nearly all night. You know, and you could hear it from where I lived, and it was just fantastic. Although I didn't used to really go to the Merton at that stage. There was one exactly across the road, the Shamrock Rose Thistle Shamrock and Thorn. Yeah. That's the one I used to go to at 16.
Oh, God. There was so many.
There was, and it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, you know.
I look at people now and they go to a pub and they start sitting on their phones and eating their pulled pork or whatever the expensive bistro is, and I just think, God, we used to go here to have fun.
Yeah.
Listen to music and then go and eat a hamburger afterwards somewhere or, it's just what's happened.
Yeah, the world's evolved and, you know, for us – and with recording stuff at home, it's recorded in, I mean, it's evolved in a really good way, but in other ways, all the technology hasn't for humankind as such, I don't think, you know, because who wants to see a person sitting on their phone all the time?
Yeah, it's been, I mean, and we all get into that sort of.
We do, yeah. I caught myself doing it the other day and I went, what am I doing? We should be talking here. Why are we looking at our phones? Stop.
Yeah, sitting. Standing in line in queues now, like I stand in a queue, I used to talk to people. Now everybody's on their phone. I think, oh, who do I talk to?
And a lot of people now don't want to talk.
No.
You know? It's sometimes some things haven't changed for the better, have they?
I actually knitted in the Mansell room.
Yeah.
I actually brought my knitting to a gig. I remember Tom Emanuel sitting down with me and go, are you knitting? And I said, yeah. And he said, right. Well,
it's relaxing, man.
Yeah, I just sit around for bloody hours, so I'd knit.
Yeah, that's right. Well, why not? Why not?
Cup of tea and knitting.
Nice. Now, we have another one of your singles, and this one is called Unraveling, and it's also the name of the album. And it's how long ago did this album come out, and can you tell us a little bit about it, please?
It came out in May this year, so it's only new. It's it hit number one on the charts in June, Australian charts.
Mm-hmm.
It's been number one, two or three in the US for quite a while, since May or since June.
Mm-hmm.
So it's done really well. It charted in the UK too. And I wrote a lot of it during COVID.
Yeah.
A lot of songs I already had bits of, and then during COVID, because we had so much time to ourselves, I did a lot of work on it. This song in particular was just about how everybody was sort of okay and everyone was saying, yeah, I'm loving this actually, you know, extra time to be with the family, and we had job keepers, so we were sort of being kept alive, probably earning more money than we've ever earned in the business. And I just then, but then some days you just wake up and go, whoa, I don't think I am all right. You know, I think I'm unraveling.
Yeah, right. I think what we'll do is just take a pause here and we're going to listen to Unraveling.
I'm unraveling, slowly losing control, and it's more than I can fathom, and everything is feeling so close.
So close, I'm losing my head,
finding excuses just to stay in bed. Those day-to-day choices, something that I dread.
I'm losing my head.
So, you know, something I've got to say is that you're a very, very talented songwriter as well as vocalist.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And I am going to tell everybody, go onto your socials. Where can people buy your albums? Are they a physical thing, or do they just download them?
They are on physical sites, and they're also on a thing called Bandcamp, which apparently is in danger of closing, which would be devastating because...
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's been bought by somebody and they're talking about it might close, but hopefully it won't, got my fingers crossed. But they're really
right.
Good because you can go on and buy it, you know, the singles, and you can buy the whole album. You don't pay $10 a month and then we get 0.0001 cents like Spotify and all the rest of them.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
And I can't remember that. I'm on a few sites that you can get the actual hard copy, or you can actually email me and I'll send one out. So
yeah. So once again, I'll just reiterate that we've got the links there and they're going to be in the description of this interview, of this show, and you can contact Lisa through those and purchase her music through those links as well as see what she's up to and what's coming up for her band, The Mercy Train, and also Sing With Soul sessions at Butcher's Brew on, is it the first or last Tuesday of the month?
It's usually the last. Okay. It can change, but...
It's
on the website too, so...
On the Butcher's Brew website.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a groovy little joint too. I love it.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's funny to see everybody come in and a little bit shy, and then they have a drink and then they start singing and then everybody's, you know, it's even some of the people at the last one, two of the people that were in the class actually got up and played with the band, sang with the band at the end, which is we did harmonies for, sat down and did harmonies for them, the whole audience. It was so good.
That's fantastic. So we've got Sing With Soul as well, and hopefully some more Janis Joplin shows around the traps.
Yeah, fucking survive.
So you'll be fine, I'm sure. You've got a great set of pipes there, and, you know, everybody wants to hear them for a long time yet.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I've really enjoyed our chat. You're a really fun lady, and I love your stories, eh?
Oh, thank you. you only have to be in this industry for a short while and you'll have plenty of stories, I think.
Oh, yes.
I'll write a book one day.
You know what? That wouldn't be a bad idea. Because I'm sure all your fans would love to read all about your travels and, you know, in Australia, where the places you've been and people you've met and all about your career.
Oh, thank you. I would hope they would, but, you know, you don't know. There's so many amazing people out there like Jeff Duff and people that should write. I think he's already written a book or he's had a book written about him or a doco.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that aren't known that have really interesting lives that I'd like to read about, but, you know, it's very hard to sort of get it out there.
Yeah, well, you never know what can happen, do you?
No, you don't.
Well, thank you very much, Lisa, and I hope you have a great time doing all your shows, and I look forward to seeing what you do next.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It's been wonderful.
You're very welcome. Well, on that note, we'll say goodbye and good night.
Goodbye and good night.
Thank you. And we were joined this evening by the gorgeous Liza Auerbach. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. I have another wonderful guest for you next week. Until then, I'm sure I will see you around the traps. Please stay safe, stay happy, stay calm, and stay awesome. Most of all, please stay listening and tuned in to this channel. Good night.